This recording is being made after the lecture because something went wrong with the recording process. So this is the third and final presentation in regard to the dark night of the soul. We've seen that there's somewhere to go in this darkness. We've seen that only God can take us there, and that God does act to take us there by transforming us in the darkness. Here in Matthew writes, not every suffering is night, but any suffering can become night. For it to be night, there have to be three elements. For it to be sheer grace in darkness, leading to union, there have to be these three elements. One, an inflow of God. And of course, God is always pressing to come in, to flow in, wanting us to live to the full. So there's no doubt and question about the willingness of God to flow into our soul. The second element is the darkness. It's suffering with the accent on bewildering suffering. And the third is our creative response. Faith, acceptance. Welcoming the inflow of God, trusting in the inflow of God, even though we can't feel it, just like faith. We sometimes might ask, why doesn't God give someone faith? I think it's the wrong question. God is offering everybody communion. The real question might be, what is stopping me? What's blocking me? What's blocking him or her from welcoming this grace, this faith? This inflow of God. So we have the assurance that where God finds space, God enters. John wrote a poem called Fonte, or the Spring. He composed it in the dark Toledo prison, where he was deprived of the Eucharist. And the stanzas tell of an ocean-sized waterfall. It's the Father surrendering everything to the Son, self-bestowing, utterly emptying to the Son. It's the Son, that's Jesus, of course, emptying himself and making complete space for the Father. And it's the Spirit, water spilling out to create a universe. The cosmos comes to drink it, though all, heaven, people, hell, all are already drenched in this. John knows it. John believes it. He sees it welcomed, cupped, and offered in the living bread, in the Eucharist. This is the poem. How well I know the living spring that flows, though it is night. That ever-living spring is hidden fast, and yet I found its dwelling place at last, although by night. Its origin, all that I know or see in the beginning from it came to be, but in the night. Nothing on earth so beautiful as this. Heaven and earth meet here, and meeting kiss, though it is night. Down to its deepest depth man may not go, nor ford its flooding waters. This I know, though it is night. Light, source of light, by which all light was made, whose brilliance never falters, cannot fade, though it is night. so mighty and unceasing is its flow. It waters heavens, earth, and realms below, although by night. Something I know of its almighty force, the flowing stream that issues from this source, although by night. From these two streams, the self-bestowal of the Father and the self-reception of the Son of this welcomed gift, from these two streams wells forth another flow. The Spirit of love, uniting the Father and Jesus. From these two streams wells forth another flow, yet neither stream precedes it. This I know, though it is night. This deathless spring, hidden in living bread, brings life to us who, lacking it, were dead. For it is night. To all that lives, come, drink your fill, it calls. Come to this water, for the darkness falls, and it is night. The living spring, so very dear to me, is here, within the bread of life I see, though it is night. In this poem, John sings of a God who is community. John shares his faith too in the Eucharist. For him, Eucharist is not simply our ritual galvanizing our togetherness. It's an act of the Trinity involving us in their togetherness. Nor is Eucharist a merely passive object of adoration. It's an activity of Christ, powerfully summoning his creatures to the water. In the 12th stanza we read, to all that lives, come, drink your fill, it calls. Come to this water, for the darkness falls, and it is night. John sees Christ here, active, torrential, receiving the full force of all that God is and unleashing its flow upon us. The everlasting fountain, released in the living bread, brings life to us. In the 11th stanza we read, this everlasting fountain, hidden in living bread, brings life to us who, lacking it, were dead, for it is night. The night refers to 1578 and his 9 months in the Toledo monastic prison. It picks up also the last 2 years of his life when he suffered slander. There were those who wanted to throw him out of the order, and he was dying. So he knew the night, but he knew that there was a presence in the night, a presence especially welcomed in the gift of the Eucharist. Love, writes John, love greatly those who speak against you and do not love you, because in this way love will come to birth in a heart that has none. That is what God does with us. God loves us that we might love God through the love God has for us. So through his own pain, bewildering pain, he could write, because he did it himself, love those who speak against you and do not love you. He also writes in his commentary on the flame, It's impossible that God failed to play his part. By communicating himself, at least in a hidden way, it's more impossible for the sun not to shine in a tranquil, open place. The sun is up early and shining on your house, ready to shine in it if you open the curtains. So God, who never sleeps nor slumbers, as he keeps watch over Israel, will enter our empty souls and fill us with divine blessings. God is like the sun shining over us to communicate himself to us. So what have we seen? The triune God is the fountain. I'm graced to see God present and acting in the suffering, and to look for the movement of God's Spirit there. Suffering makes me aware of my incapacity and my need, and so it faces me towards the lover, who alone can draw me into communion. And it is this communion which alone heals and fills my life. As John says, though it is night. When John speaks of night, writes Ian Matthew, which comes upon us and wrests our control from our control. John isn't imposing suffering, brackets, nor is God. Suffering is a fact. John's intention is to encourage us to bear it creatively. God doesn't cause the suffering, but God is present in it. It, along with everything else about us, comes under the providential care of God. God is there, not willing it, not intending it, not causing it, but loving us in it. Where there's no love, writes John of the Cross, put love and you'll draw love out. And he also writes, when you're burdened, you're joined to God. God is your strength. God is with people who suffer. When there's no burden, you're just with yourself and your own weakness. It's in the difficulties which test our patience that the virtue and strength of the soul is increased and affirmed. Healing comes particularly, writes in Matthew, in situations that take us out of our own control, in the kind of pain that is bewildering. Some of John's images in his writing come from his childhood, as a baby being carried by his mother as she went about looking for work, as he watched his mother holding other people's children to her breast and weaning them, as he saw children wriggling in their mother's arms while the mother is offering comfort. God is like that, says John. In his apostolic exhortation for the fourth centenary of the death of John of the Cross, Pope John Paul II writes, physical, moral, and spiritual suffering, and he gives some examples, like sickness, the plagues of hunger, war, injustice, solitude, the lack of meaning in life, the very fragility of human experience, the sorrowful knowledge of sin, the seeming absence of God. These are for the believer all purifying experiences which might be called a knight of faith. On page 82 of his book, Ian Matthew offers us four scenes, four situations which may make sense to you, examples of bewildering suffering. First scenario. We've been working hard to educate our children. It means sacrifice, sometimes too much sacrifice, with commuting to work, cutbacks in lifestyle, lack of space just to be together. There seems to be less and less fun. It's hard, but we want to do it. Then a letter comes, confidential and quite curt, from the headmaster. Your daughter has been caught in some heavy, drugs-linked thieving. It looks serious. This is night pain. It's bewildering. Everything is turned back to front. Second scenario. It was coverage of the street children that finally made me wake up. There's a world out there, and I'm responsible. With the encouragement and some help from the diocese, I gave up my job. I went on a training course in poverty awareness. It was hard. I suppose I missed the prestige my work used to give, but I saw it through, and now I am, well, nervous but ready. And the news comes that the diocese is no longer interested. Not just hard, this is back to front. Bewildering suffering. Third scenario. I don't want to go back on my decision, but I don't understand what's happening to me. My life has been hollow, and I used to try to fill it with glossy relationships which just sounded tinny when you tapped them. When I fell in with a different group and started to pray, all the loose ends came together, and there was purpose and energy, enough for a real change in my life. Since then, I've spoken about my own journey to countless people, and it seemed to help them. But now I feel a fraud. I come to pray a lot, and there's no more sense of presence. It doesn't hold my interest the way it used to. It's not that there's some alternative, but the whole scenario has just flattened out. I thought at first I was having an off day. I know mood can affect prayer, but it was the same the next day. And the next. It's become a pattern. This isn't just hard. It's all back to front. Bewildering. This, says Ian Matthew, is the night where there's not only pain, but where the ground I stand on to face the pain seems to shift. The mystical night. The divine approach is registering in mind and feelings, but registering as painful contrast. John is calling that the place not of chaos, but of transformation. In writing night, John doesn't want to say, it's all right, you see, this is the explanation. He wants to say, it's not all right, it's a mess. But you're not alone in this. God is present in this. Now is the time not to lose faith in God. For this is the third element tonight. The first is the inflowing of love. The second is the bewildering nature. And the first, of course, we can assume, know, in faith is happening. But the second is bewildering. And here's the third. Our response to the suffering that bewilders is not to abandon faith in God. We put a lot of emotional energy, writes Ian, into two areas, personal weaknesses from which we long to be free, and negative situations which come uninvited upon us. Left like that, they're a recipe for despair in the weakness and resentment at what hurts us. To leaving it like that, Knight suggests an alternative. When the negative comes upon you, remember your desire to be free. Free from the personal weakness which was crippling you. It's here that God is doing it. And it's important not to panic or run away. To trust that God is present can turn the pain, where there has to be pain, from death throes to the pangs of birth. Climbing a mountain speaks of communion, where the goal is not to sink a solitary flagpole into the summit, but to, in John the Cross's words, make an altar of oneself for a sacrifice of love. We're not climbing alone, so we take God's hand offered to us. There is no other way. Our instinct for survival, coupled with the anxiety of our age for achievement and perceived meaning, writes Matthew, conspire to make such a trust uniquely difficult. John gives us the schemers not to help us predict, but to encourage us to surrender. Do not struggle for something you once had and have now gone beyond. Instead, take heart. Persevere patiently. That is, don't run away. Without pain, it's okay to try to lessen the suffering. Of course, I'm not looking for the pain. But trust in God. Let God carry you in loving attentiveness. So don't struggle for something you once had, writes Ian Matthew, and you've now gone beyond. No, take heart. Persevere patiently. Without pain, trust in God in loving attentiveness. We may have to live as if God sustained us in order to discover that God really does sustain us. We're called to trust, not to panic, but to hold on, not to collapse into the pain or to indulge it, but to rely on God, to be attentive to God's presence and action in my soul. When negative experiences come upon me, such as the night, I am to remember my longing and my need for God's inflowing life. And trust, says John, that in the bewildering darkness, God is making space for the gift of himself to me. Purifying away whatever obstacles there are to the full communion with God. This, writes Ian Matthew, is what turns pain into night. Grieve. Address what can be addressed. Don't condone the sin that may be causing the situation, but trust that the Father holds this situation in his hands and will turn it around.